My name is Sotirios Levakos, and I am a doctoral researcher at the University of Cambridge. The subject I am studying is scenario planning, and this is the subject of my PhD thesis.
My name is Bjarke Vaskur, and I'm a curator here at Primer. For the next hour, I'm going to be interviewing Sotirios Levakos about his work on scenario planning. So, Sotirios, my first question is, how did you get to know of scenario planning, and how did you become interested in it?
So when I was working at Procter & Gamble, I was very interested in strategic planning, and I actually found this group I'm working currently with at University of Cambridge, Institute for Manufacturing. I found this group by accident, but I was immediately fascinated by how interesting scenario planning is, how interesting the subject is, and so I wanted to study it a little bit further and in depth. So, in my opinion, it's one of the most fascinating things to study, scenario planning and systems thinking, and because it encapsulates the most sophisticated ideas about our world and about how we think about the future and how we base our decisions on that.
And could you just start with giving an overview of what scenario planning is and how it's used?
Yeah, definitely. So, first of all, I need to mention that scenario planning is an umbrella term. And this means that it is used by many, many people to refer to a variety of concepts and activities. So, in its broadest sense, scenario planning can be thought as an activity of systematically investigating the future. So, we think about the future, we examine it, in a very systematic way. On a second level, you can think of scenario planning as a methodology, which means all these principles and all these axioms that guide our actions, guide our practice of examining the future. And a scenario in its broadest sense is simply a description of a future state, an image of the future. Now, within this scenario planning community, where scenario planning is an umbrella term, there are many different school of thoughts and many different strands of practice and many different methodologies of scenario planning. And I'm specifically focusing on the dominant one, which is sometimes called the intuitive logics strand of scenario planning, and it was pioneered by Shell, Royal Dutch Shell. It is also known by JBN, the Global Business Network, and it is sometimes referred to as the Pierwack approach to scenario planning or as the 2x2 metrics method. Now, the main purpose of examining the future is always to inform decisions and actions, right? You might read many things about, you know, exploring the future, tackling uncertainty, but the main objective is ultimately to inform decisions and actions, right? And of course, you know, the different school of thoughts have different, you know, they are a little bit more specific about the purpose of developing scenarios, or they have different assumptions about our ignorance towards the future, and, you know, they have very different methodologies. If you have different ideas about our ignorance, about how, you know, what constitutes this ignorance about the future, then you have a different way of trying to tackle our ignorance. So, yeah. In short, you know, that's scenario planning and its purpose.
And yeah, maybe you already started a little bit, but maybe it would be good to have kind of a history of scenario planning starting as far back as possible and kind of going up to the present.
Yeah. So, you know, if you think scenario planning as a way to examine the future, then, you know, people have been examining the future, you know, as back as, you know, to the origins of Homo sapiens. However, you know, if you want to trace modern scenario planning and the methodology somewhere, it can be traced back to the work of Hermann Kahn, right, at Rand Institute. Much of his work was private, and it was not publicly available, especially the work he did in the 50s and 60s. But in the 70s, he published, in the late 60s, in 1967, he published some of the book that is considered nowadays to be the cornerstone of scenario planning, or the origins of scenario planning. So the book is the year 2000, and Herman Kahn and Anthony Wiener, back then, first of all, they introduced the term scenario in what is now what is today known as the scenario planning literature. And, you know, some of the methodological ideas of scenario planning can be traced back to this specific book, the year 2000, that was published in 1967. This is largely considered the first generation of scenario planning. The second generation of scenario planning, in terms of people and organizations, revolves around mainly three companies: Royal Dutch Shell, JBN, or Global Business Network, and SRI International, Stanford Research Institute International. And again, Pierre Wack is the person who is most commonly associated with the second generation of scenario planning. And it's the person who pioneered scenario planning in business and who actually made scenario planning famous. So Pierre Wack is actually considered the father of the second generation of Pierre Wack. He's considered the father of the second generation of scenario planning. He published two articles in Harvard Business Review, which are the foundational articles for scenario planning, as we know it, for the second generation of scenario planning as we know it today.
What was his background? How did he get to that, doing that kind of work?
So I think, so Pierre Wack, he was working at Royal Dutch Shell, and he was working at the planning function. And in the late 60s, early 70s, he realized that the current systems that they were working, that they were using back then in order to plan for the future and to do their budgeting and other, you know, resource allocations, they were not effective, and they were not sufficient to tackle the challenges of a discontinuous world. So the problem is that most of these tools they were using, they were very much mathematical, and they were relying on extrapolations of the past, which, you know, in the late 60s and early 70s, people have realized that the world is not as continuous as they thought it could be. So this idea is also, you know, the idea that the world is not an extrapolation of the past is also obvious in Herman Kahn's work, but it's also one of the starting points for Pierre Wack to develop his own methodology and develop the first set of scenarios in the early 70s. So he realized the deficiencies of the planning system that they had in Shell, and he was obviously talking with Herman Kahn and with other people, especially from SRI International and from General Electric, and he started experimenting with different ways, you know, of planning and of different ways of speaking to managers who make the decision. And this is how scenario planning, the first scenarios, were developed.
And as I understand, he also had some kind of esoteric interests, or interests in spirituality. He was a follower of Gurdjieff.
Yeah. So Pierre Wack exactly had also this, you know, like these internal worries and this esoteric moment, and he was traveling extensively in Asia, in Japan, in India, where he met his guru, and he had his spiritual guru who was guiding him along the way. I'm not quite sure you know, how much these people actually had an influence on the actual development of the scenario planning methodology. Although, you know, having a spiritual guru who is so mysterious gave, you know, a veneer of mysticism to the practices. But, you know, as, you know, as an analytical tool, I don't think that Pierre Wack's methodology was influenced by, you know, his guru or the Indian or the, you know, the Buddhist or the Japanese journeys that he was making. He was traveling a lot, that's for sure.
And for the Pierre Wack kind of method, what are the sort of the central tenets and the central kind of ideas that he was working with?
So, first of all, you have the idea of the microcosm, of the mental models. So, this idea was very strong in Pierre Wack's methodology. You know, managers have a mental map, which is like a map of the external world and how we understand our external world and how we base our actions based on this mental map. And he was very much, he was observing in practice that on many occasions the map we have, you know, in our minds is not a very accurate representation of what's happening out there. And one of the basic tenets of Pierre Wack's methodology was exactly to try and make this adjustment between the microcosm that exists in the minds of the managers and it's not an accurate reflection, and trying to help the managers adapt to the external changes in the macrocosm, the real world that exists independently of the managers. Pierre Wack is also very well known for the idea of the predetermined elements. Predetermined elements are actually some elements in scenarios that you believe with certainty. It's, you know, so you have the underlying idea about ignorance and uncertainty that it's captured through scenarios. But Pierre Wack introduced the idea that some elements, they can be forecasted with very much accuracy. It's not actually forecasts. They are like, he used, you know, this example of a river in India. So he was telling the example that, you know, if you are in a mountain and there is a very heavy rain at top of the mountain, then in 2 or 3 days, you would expect the river that flows in the mountain from the mountain onwards, you know, to be full and, you know, to overflow and have a lot of water. So the predetermined element is also a very strong idea of what Pierre Wack introduced in scenario planning. And you have the idea that the business exists, it depends on the external environment. So the business, Royal Dutch Shell, or the business, any kind of, you know, business, sits amidst the external environment, and it's very much influenced by the external environment. I think these are the three, you know, strong methodological tenets that Pierre Wack introduced in his practice. Now, some other ideas pre-existed that are obvious in Pierre Wack's practice pre-existed Pierre Wack. He didn't introduce them or came from other places like the Stanford Research Institute and the work of Peter Schwartz and Jay Ogilvie, who later on, you know, founded. They also, Peter Schwartz and Jay Ogilvie also worked at Royal Dutch Shell, but, you know, after some time they founded the Global Business Network, and, you know, they further developed the scenario planning methodology and brought it closer to what we now know as scenario planning.
And one last thing about Pierre Wack is, as I understood it, he was very adamant about talking about scenario planning as something that is more about influencing the managers, like mental maps or their kind of capacity for decisions, more than actually trying to give some kind of accuracy.
Yeah. That's actually, so this idea is, so you're talking about two ideas here. So the first idea is about influencing the microcosm. And indeed, Pierre Wack, you know, in every lecture that he gave, in every paper that he wrote, he says that ultimately the purpose of scenario planning is to influence microcosm and change the microcosm, the mental maps of the managers. This is the purpose of scenario planning. And, you know, if you, through the scenarios, you don't manage to change the microcosm of the managers, then the whole exercise is futile. This is the number of objective, because the microcosm, the mental map, is the place where all the actions and all decisions and all judgments come. So this is where, you know, you base your rationale about making a decision. So you're absolutely right. Pierre Wack very often repeated about this idea of influencing the microcosm, the mental map of scenario practice of the managers. Now, the second idea that you mentioned is about the difference between scenario planning and forecasting and about prediction. Now, scenarios, in the intuitive logic sense, they predominantly reject the idea of prediction. Scenarios do not aim to predict, do not aim to be accurate, and should not be judged based on how well, you know, after 20 years or 15 years, how well, you know, the scenarios captured what eventually happened. Now, so, and this is one of the main points of departure between scenario planning and forecasting, right? It's about the different assumptions about uncertainty and about our ignorance about the future.
And so the history, because as I understand it, the history at Shell was also kind of influenced, like one of the reasons it became as important to them as it became was because it was successful in predicting some of the effects of the oil crisis in the 70s.
Exactly. So it's one of the reasons why, you know, scenario planning became so famous, and because, you know, the first time that Pierre Wack tried to do scenario planning, he hit, you know, exactly the target, because he was able to predict, you know, the oil crisis. So he was immensely lucky in this respect, and this is one of the reasons why his the Shell style of scenario planning became so famous and so widespread, and everybody tried to copy them. Now, it was, you know, this accident, this luck of Pierre Wack that led, you know, to scenario planning becoming famous. But again, scenario planning is actually, in my opinion, the most sophisticated methodology that we have, that I am aware of examining the future. It has the best thinking that, you know, it's available in humanity about how to examine the future. So yes, Pierre Wack was very lucky, and this is what, you know, made the Shell scenarios famous, but still, you know, there is a lot of merit and a lot of sound work behind the scenario planning methodology as it has evolved, you know, through decades.
And so going on, if Pierre Wack is the second generation, what is the third generation, or how did it evolve from, I guess, from, that's like the 70s, late 70s?
The second generation, I think we can trace in its origins to Pierre Wack and the early 70s. Now, the second generation is ongoing, right? And you still have projects of the second generation happening. Now, it's, you know, you can talk about the third generation, but it's not like the third generation replaced the second generation. It's, you know, an adaptation of scenario planning But it does not. Both the second generation and the third generation, we have projects right now happening, because the third generation began, I would say, in the early 90s with the work of Adam Kahane, and later in the mid or late 90s with the work of Jed Davis at World Business Council for Sustainable Development. And now, the point of departure is the following. In second generation Pierre Wack Royal Dutch Shell scenarios, the main objective is to formulate strategy. Is to, you know, you're a business predominantly, right? It also applies in public policy and NGOs, but, you know, typically the client, the person who is doing the scenario planning project, is a business. And the objective of the scenarios is, there is the idea that this business cannot influence the environment it's working on. They have very little degree of influence towards the external environment of the business, and they need to make strategy, to make decisions that will help them be successful. And typically the members of the scenario planning project are the scenario consultants and people from the business who is undertaking the scenario planning project. Now, in the work of Adam Kahane, in the work of Jed Davis, and what is called the third generation of scenario planning, and I sometimes call the multi-stakeholder scenario planning, the situation is a little bit different, because the client, the people who is undertaking the exercise, is not a single business, but it's typically a very large group of people who typically are influenced by a big issue, societal issue. So you have people from businesses, people from government, people from civil society, NGOs, organizations, special interest groups, etc., in the third generation of scenarios. So it's also called stakeholder engagement or public interest scenarios. And now the objective, in second generation scenarios, you have the idea that you cannot change the environment. On the contrary, in third generation scenarios, in multi-stakeholder scenarios, the idea is that you can shape, you can change the environment, right? You can change, for example, the city of Copenhagen, you can change sustainability, you can change this water, you can change water infrastructure, you can change many things. And the objective here, is first of all, all the people who are affected by this issue, businesses, government, society, that they participate and they inform the scenarios so that the scenarios also capture their views and their opinions. So, it's a stakeholder engagement project. So you have people, participating in the process so that the scenarios do not reflect, only the interests of the business or only the interests of policymakers or, everyone who's affected by the specific issue, must be included. And the objective, other than, including, is to fostering, is to, governing all these people and start fostering collaboration, identifying a common ground and start having all these interested parties in an issue working together so that they can shape the future and they can shape the environment and, they can steer very big, societal systems towards the direction they like. So, I would say that the difference between the second and the second generation of scenario planning evolved from the first generation of scenario planning. The third generation of scenario planning also evolved, from the second generation of scenario planning, but it's not, a better version of scenario planning. It's like a fork. It's like a fork of scenario planning, where, you have different problematic situations and different purposes. Does this make sense?
Sure. And yeah, just coming back to Peter Schwartz and the Global Business Network, I don't know, could you just give a short kind of overview of the work that was done, not only there, but in scenario planning in kind of the 80s and the early 90s?
Yeah, so Peter Schwartz was actually the person who replaced Pierre Wack at Royal Dutch Shell. So after Pierre Wack, after he, you know, he left Shell, you have Peter Schwartz and Jay Ogilvie. These two people, and these two people are very important, because after they left Shell, they went to California and they began the company that is now known as, it's actually, it was later on bought by Deloitte and Monitor. So JBN is very famous nowadays because, not only because they continued the legacy of scenario planning, but because of a book that Peter Schwartz published. The name of the book is The Art of a Long View, and the book is very important because it effectively enabled the large adoption of scenario planning. You know, at the end of the book, of The Art of a Long View book, Jay Ogilvie inserted a small appendix where he describes a process for developing scenarios. Until that moment, the book was published in 1991. Until that moment, you know, scenario planning was only limited to a very small number of people, right? And for the rest of the people who they were not working in Royal Dutch Shell or JBN, they effectively, scenario planning was very complicated for them and they didn't know how to practice scenario planning. But with publishing a process, a scenario planning process with that book, then we have the opportunity, you know, many consultants now had the opportunity to start practicing scenario planning, to start doing scenario planning projects. So it is because, in my opinion, of this book that we saw a very large, an explosion of scenario consultant and scenario planning projects and practices. Now, this book is both a blessing and a curse for the scenario planning field. It's a blessing because obviously, you know, so many people adopted scenario planning, but it's also a curse because in their attempt, you know, to present a process of scenario planning that is easy to do and easy to repeat, the authors, Jay Ogilvie, he didn't capture the full scenario planning methodology. So there is a scenario planning methodology that's private. It's, you know, you can find it only in Royal Dutch Shell, JBN, and the minds of the people who worked there. And there is a, you know, a scenario planning methodology that it's public. And, you know, you can find it, the public scenario planning methodology, you can find it in the books of scenario planning, in the academic publications of scenario planning. But unfortunately, there is a very big gap between the private scenario planning methodology, which is highly sophisticated and state of the art, and, you know, the one that's publicly available. And, you know, in my opinion, you know, the gap is just too big. It's a very, it's a caricature. It's, you know, it does not, it's not as sophisticated and as well done as, you know, the private one is much more sophisticated. So mm-hmm.
And what are some of the differences? I mean, of course, there's a kind of experience and a technicality to just having done it many times, but what is the, like how is it caricatured, or what is the...
So let me give you an example. If you, going back to what we were discussing about Pierre Wack, about how the objectives of scenario planning is to influence the microcosm of the managers. So if you read the book, The Art of a Long View, you will, and you read the process of how to conduct scenario planning, you have absolutely no idea about how to influence the microcosm of the managers. So obviously, you know, there are some elements about how to effectively change the mental models of the managers that, you know, it's missing from the public methodology of scenario planning. And, you know, my work, my PhD is all about that. It tries to bring some of the methodology that it's private, the sophisticated methodology, it tries to make it publicly available. So one of the biggest gaps in the scenario planning literature is that we don't really know how scenario planning is effectively conducted. We don't know enough things about high quality scenario planning projects, and this is a huge gap.
You're talking about this, like the Pierre-Weck method. You mentioned something called intuitive logics, which I guess intuition is also something that's kind of very subjective or personalized in a way. Could you describe what that actually means and how it's connected to the people doing the scenario planning?
So I need, you know, this is a very big question you're asking, because you need to understand. So first of all, during my research, I found really no evidence that Pierre-Weck or Peter Schwartz or Royal, or someone from Royal Dutch Shell or from JBN gave the name intuitive logics to their practice. So many academics call the Shell practice and JBN practice as intuitive logics, but the people who actually developed this practice and this method, they never gave this name to their own methodology and their own practice. At least I found no evidence in my research. There is nothing to support this idea. Now, it's a huge question, you know, this question has a huge answer, because intuition is a very big element in developing scenarios. But in my opinion, it's not the dominant one. And people will say that, so first of all, scenario planning is not brainstorming, right? It's a very, very deep research activity, right? You don't, you know, it's not like blue sky thinking where you just, you know, you just, you know, sit down in a field of grass, and you look at the sky and you come up with the ideas. It's nothing like that. There is a ton of research behind any high quality scenario planning project that, you know, respects the name. So everything that you say about the future needs to be very well explained, and a very strong rationale must be provided for everything you say about the future. So if you look at how Pierre-Weck is defining a scenario, he says that a scenario, so he says something like, when I was presenting scenario projects in Shell, I would spend one-fifth of the time talking about the scenarios, and I would spend four-fifths of the time explaining why, how and why a scenario is the way it is. So it's the whole, what's important in scenario planning, and what's also distinguishing it from forecasting, is that you try to explain why a future looks like this. So it's not intuition at all. At all. Now, in my research, one of the biggest findings is that the term intuitive logics, that is very often used in the literature, is actually a terrible name to give to scenario planning, because scenario is not intuitive. Okay, it's intuition is not the dominant element, and you have very, very careful reasoning why you select specific scenarios, and in, you know, explaining also why these scenarios might come about. So it's intuition is a strong element, but not the, you know, after all, scenario planning is a creative process, so intuition plays a role, but it's not the predominant element. And intuitive logic, in my opinion, is a terrible name for, you know, for this school of thought.
And yeah, one thing about the research that's interesting, I think, so we've been talking to Barbara Heinzen, who used to work at Shell as well. Like one of the things coming out from those conversations is this very transdisciplinary kind of mode of investigation. So you actually try to get information or do research in a very, very varied and wide field, in a sense that you have a lot of different expertises that need to kind of communicate together, be drawn into to create a sort of map that you can then make the scenarios from.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, it's basically the way that we have split up disciplines in the academic world, like in economics, you know, sociology or social sciences or political sciences or, you know, about, you know, environment, it's not working. And, you know, it cannot... you know, fundamentally, it's a... So probably Barbara talked to you a lot about systems thinking and how, you know, splitting, you know, using the PESTL model or, you know, does not lead you to a systemic understanding. And I fully agree with this opinion. It's, you know, if you check, you know, any textbook on sustainable development or sustainability, they are going to talk about transdisciplinarity, multidisciplinarity, and things like that. You know, splitting down the world into PESTL model, like political, economical, social, technological, is not working anymore, and this is not a good way, you know, to understand the world and how it works, because it does not lead you to the insights and does not... Our understanding, the way we understand things, is not split to political, economic. So when you try to understand something, when you try to understand, I don't know, a phenomenon, you don't think in terms of, you know, politics, economics, you know, social and technology. So, yeah, I fully agree with, you know, what Barbara said.
And I guess, I mean, at Shell, I know they were quite a lot of different disciplines working in the scenario unit. And I guess with the so-called third generation with Adam Kahane, I mean, the multi-stakeholder model, I guess, is like inherently transdisciplinary in a way.
Yeah, but this doesn't mean that the second generation of scenarios is not transdisciplinary. All scenario planning, all high-quality scenario planning, to put it like this, is transdisciplinary. Should be transdisciplinary. And, you know, the difference between, again, the second generation of scenario planning and the multi-stakeholder scenario planning, you know, is just, in one case, you have a single organization, typically a business, who is, you know, doing scenario planning. And in the other case, in multi-stakeholder scenarios, you have, as the name suggests, multiple stakeholders across civil society. Civil society, businesses, organizations, public policymakers, etc. So, but yeah, scenario planning, high quality scenario planning, is transdisciplinary by definition.
Okay, so I think like one of the really interesting things for me about tracing kind of the history of scenario planning is looking also a little bit about what kind of changes in society change the way we look at the future, or scenario planning look at the future. So you have, I guess, I mean, you can answer this better than me probably, but like, I guess with the Herman Kahn was very influenced by Cold War politics, the atomic bomb, these kind of things and so forth. I don't know, could you kind of talk a little bit about this societal development in relation to how scenario planning evolved?
So, yeah, you know, it might seem obvious to say that, you know, the scenario planning methodology tried to adapt, you know, to the problems that we're facing. So, you know, what's a scenario planning methodology? You know, it's a way to achieve something, right? It's a methodology, you know, it's a means to an end. You try to achieve something. So, as you said, you know, Hermann Kahn was very much influenced by Cold War. This is where, you know, scenario planning, this is the kind of problem he was facing. So his methodology was very much influenced by, you know, the problem, the Cold War problem he was trying to face. Then, you know, at Pierre Wack, you had a different kind of problem. The problem is the oil of the price is going, the price of the oil is going to plummet, and we need to do something about it. And then he had to develop scenarios that exactly, you know, try to address this kind of problem, how we adapt to an environment that we cannot control. And lastly, you know, in the multi-stakeholder projects, you have, you know, things like sustainable development, which is a huge challenge. And, you know, the methodology is exactly reflecting this kind of challenge. So, you know, we face different types of problems, and, you know, either as a society or as a single business or as a collective of, you know, people, businesses, and, you know, we try to tackle this kind of problems, and, you know, in order to effectively tackle this type of problems, we develop a methodology. So to a very large extent, you know, the scenario planning methodology reflects the types of problems that we try to address. And, you know, one of the challenges of sustainable development, you know, it became obvious after the Brundtland report in 1987, you have like a decade after that, you have the World Business Council for Sustainable Development Scenarios, where the methodology was exactly adapted in order to address, you know, the challenge of sustainable development.
Mm-hmm. And do you see or do you know about some kind of things going on now, you could say? Because I think for a lot of the things that we're researching about the future, I think kind of climate change and how the kind of the time scales are constantly becoming shorter is also changing the future. So the future becomes in a way more volatile or unpredictable because the time scales become so short. So you actually don't know you can't predict because of feedback loops and so on, natural feedback loops. So my question is, like, do you see some kind of developments going forward that would kind of address this change in how the future, or how the, I mean, I guess also there's a lot more data now, there's a different kind of research methodology that becomes available.
Exactly. So, you know, in terms of volatility of climate change, you know, this belongs to the realm of, you know, equations, to put it like this. It's not exactly the type of scenario planning that, you know, became the Hermann Kahn or the Pierre Wack type of scenario planning. Now, in terms of intuitive logic scenario planning methodology, I'm not aware of a new kind of, you know, development. So the academic community has not even begun to understand the third type of scenario planning, the multi-stakeholder scenario planning. It's, you know, it's entirely not understood. There is very little known about, you know, really known, like in proper academic research. There are very few things known about multi-stakeholder scenario planning projects. And, you know, you can see that even in the second generation of scenario planning, there are like huge gaps in our understanding. Now, so there is much work to be done, you know, in the second generation and third generation of scenario planning. In terms of methodological developments, I think that we do not see any further developments because, you know, we have not effectively begun to address the problems that, you know, the third generation of scenario planning has presented us.
And what are the problems that they presented, the third generation?
In the third, in the multi-stakeholder scenario planning, you actually have, you know, the problems of collaboration, stakeholder engagement, shaping the future, and, you know, you see that in terms of scenario planning, the this, to put it like this, you don't see a methodology that it's shared among all the practitioners or among, so the practices are highly individual. So this indicates, you know, that the field is still, you know, in its very early days, right? So in multi-stakeholder engagement, scenario planning, it's still in a very early days. So I would expect the field to mature a little bit further because, you know, trying to tackle new challenges and new types of problematic situations.